We are in Champions League, man.
That was my
dilly din, dilly don, come on.
Into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has won it.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
This is the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast with Gary Kernin.
Aguero.
Hello, welcome to the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast. My name is Gary Kernin. Joining us today is Martin Volk, Head of Coach Education and Methodology at the Czech Football Association. Phenomenal insight into coaching methodology and a real, real passion for development that you're going to hear and really, really enjoy. This will make you think and reflect a lot. Before we start, big, big announcement. The first ever Modern Soccer Coach online course is launching this week. A certificate in advanced tactical analysis and coaching methodology. We take a look at tactical analysis alongside coaching, alongside elite environments, online course. You can learn at your own pace. And I am also there to help and support with a direct message feature option that you can use for feedback or any questions as you go alongside the course. 11 modules, and then at the end of it, there's a match assignment that will get you the certificate in advanced analysis and coaching methodology. So if you're an aspiring analyst or you're a coach who's looking to upskill on that side of the game, the link is in the podcast notes. Modern Soccer Coach online course, the first one out this week, advanced tactical analysis and coaching methodology certificate. Please check it out. All right, here's Martin. Enjoy.
Martin, thank you so much for joining me on the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast.
Thank you very much, Gary. I really appreciate your invite to this podcast. It's an honor and it's great to see you and catch up after such a long time.
Coaching methodology, maybe something new, maybe something overused, maybe something just completely misunderstood in the coaching community. We're going to get into that today. But the first question is an easy one, little layup for you to get going. Give us a technical, like a definition of what a coaching methodology is.
That's a great question, Gary. And I guess 10 people can give you 10 different answers. So I'm going to try to provide my point of view on this. But in the easiest way, how I would describe it is knowing why you're doing what you're doing the way you're doing it. So in my way, you know, the way I see it, it should align not just with your coaching philosophy, but in better case, probably even your club philosophy. So what is your vision? What are you trying to achieve? Where you want to be? What is your mission in a way? How you actually want to get there? And what are the values which are driving the everyday behavior and the decision-making you're doing? So it's always important to know, you know, what is your goal? Either if we're talking about the goal being on the level of a team and collective goals, long-term, short-term, or if we're going down to even the individual goals, what are the players trying to achieve, you know, and how are they going to achieve it and how you can help them or what do they need to get, you know, help to achieve it. So I think that's a short description of how I see coaching methodology.
Let me ask you this. How deep does that go? You've got the first team that's on the TV that you're going to see and that's producing the revenue, hopefully, and the wins and all that good stuff. Should that go the whole way down to every aspect of the club? And should that change as it moves, or how does it change?
Well, I guess so. You know, when we're talking even about the club philosophy, you know, it can influence the way you work as a coach and your coaching methodology. Because if you're in a club which has a structure when they only have a first team or reserve team and their focus is on, you know, bringing the players who are already, you know, at the level to reach the first team, that will influence your coaching methodology. Then if you're in the structure where you have a first team and then you have the academy system, you might even have a pre-academy system. And then another way of looking at this from my perspective is how you actually perceive the player in front of you. So do you look at the player as And I'll just throw out some examples. Hopefully it will bring the context out. So if I'm looking at the player as a potentially future professional player, I'm trying to promote to the first team or trying to actually sell to another clubs, you know, and earn money for the club. That might be different in terms of how I'm going to approach my coaching methodology than if I'm looking at the player as a human being who, from holistical point of view, which I'm trying to really, you know, develop in the way that they can be the best version of themselves and fit the club culture, which can mean that if they're not going to make it, and there I mean the players, if they're not going to make it to the professional level, they might actually still going on their different careers and then come back to the club system and culture in, let's say, you know, position as either a club supporter, a diehard fan, because they live it, you know, and you help them on their way through life. They can be coaches, they can be managers, they can be supporting staff, it can be whatever. And there's, you know, I think two different worlds which might impact the way you're actually trying to develop the players through your coaching methodology.
Very interesting. Very interesting. How many types of methodology is there, or how much variation is there in the methodology space?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the right one to answer that, but, you know, we can open up the rabbit hole here. For me, coaching methodology should be kind of like a sweet spot or that niche in between the theory and the practice. So sort of evidence-based, so the empirical and experiential areas. Because sometimes, you know, we as a coaches, we just get carried away, you know, trying to do things the way we feel like it's the best way. And, you know, doing things the same way for several years and thinking that we don't need to change that because we're having, you know, same outcomes. But sometimes it's even important to have some sort of, you know, a feedback to look at the what I do, the way I do and why I do it in a way what I'm trying to expect, you know, to be the outcome. So, you know, to give an example which might make sense to the listeners from my own experience, when I came to Canada, you know, I was a starting coach. That's actually when I met you, and I might actually come back to that story because there's something I'd like to say about that. I felt like, you know, I was a young coach. I just finished my master's degree. I obtained my UFA license, and I thought I know everything. A European guy coming to Canada, and I felt like what I'm doing is the best way possible. And then I met mentors of mine, which brought some let's say, different variations of methodology, which came from science or research. And I started to dig into it. And one of them for me was, for example, constraints-led approach. I don't know if you or the listeners, you know, heard of that. But, you know, the first time I saw it, I was like, I don't get it. And I was motivated to really find a way how to connect the dots and learn more about it. And then as you're digging in, you know, and you're trying to feed your motivation to get the answers, you're finding that there's so many different variations how we can actually, you know, approach the way you understand performance, skill acquisition, the way you actually approach learning designs, the development of the players, the development of their expertise. It, you know, there is different underlying principles which are either supporting one way or the other. So I think that there is multiple ways how we can approach your methodology in terms of how you actually design sessions, how you teach the players, how you engage them, how you share the accountability and, you know, the ownership of their development itself, and etc. So I don't know if you want to go into more details about the certain pedagogical approaches, but I think that can be a good start to the conversation.
Yeah, brilliant start. Here's what I'm thinking. You've got a coach listening to this who's either driving in the car or who's either out for a run, working out or doing stuff, and then listening to it, reflecting on it and saying, I've never really gave a lot of thought to my methodology. you know, you've got probably two different types of coaches. You've got someone who's like, yeah, I do all the right stuff. You've got someone else that's probably thinking, yeah, oh, I probably do everything wrong. Well, the question I would have for both of those scenarios is, how would you assess someone's methodology? Because it's so wide ranging. Is it your approach to session design? Is it everything in the environment? Is it connected to philosophy? Like, how deep does this go?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it can go really deep. You know, in order to make sure that you're trying to be effective in what you're doing is to know the environment you're at. From the point of view, like, we can talk about social, cultural, you know, habits, beliefs, the way of life, the history of that place, knowing the players and the people involved within the environment you're at, what is their, you know, history, what has been influencing them and their way of learning and perceiving the game or the life itself. So those are all factors which can play a role with it. But then I know those car rides when you're really listening to podcasts and you're having thousands of thoughts. But what I would like to say about this is, for me, it was really important to try to really explain in a rational way what I'm trying to achieve and how I'm going to about it to achieve it. So if, for example, if we're talking about that, I want my players to really be adaptable, creative, intelligent players with a really good functional skills, which means that they can really perform their skills in the real game, so under pressure. That means that, for example, if I'm looking at the decision making, which is important for me, what do I know about learning designs which actually enhanced the decision making of the players? What do I know about decision making of the players? You know, how does it work? So I would really recommend all of the coaches to try to dig deep in the way I'm trying to achieve something, and can I explain what I'm trying, or the way I'm trying to do it and achieve it, so then, you know, it can be actually understood by the people involved with it. Because I think that it's really important that if you're doing something with the players, the way you're trying to guide them, the way you're trying to help them develop, they need to understand the why. Why are we doing this? You know, what am I getting out of this? How does this transfer to the game environment? And I think it more you understand what you're doing, and you can actually go even deep from, you know, being evidence-based and, you know, having experiences as well, that can help the way you're managing your coaching methodology.
Brilliant. And the more you understand the landscape, as you're saying, the more you understand, the deeper your bank of information in this goes, then the more equipped you'll be to navigate around the type of method. If you're just showing up and saying, listen, I've done the same thing for 20 years, I'm fine, and you're not really in a position to talk about methodology in general, because not really open the mind up to anything.
Perhaps, like, I think, again, different people might have different opinion, but I'm going to speak for myself. When I was in the roles of being a technical director or sporting director, or now even a coach educator, for me, when somebody asks me a question about certain approach or a method I'm using within the session, you know, it is really important for me to know how I'm going to explain it, how I'm going to discuss what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. You know, what is the goal and what is the method I'm using to reach the goal actually mean, you know? And that is really important, that, or it was and still is and will be really important for me. And I think that can be a drive towards the young coaches to not be afraid to ask questions, to dig deep into resources and try to find those answers. And just, yeah, again, you know, don't be really caught up in the theory, because it can get quite challenging, and don't get discouraged by it. But piece by piece, trying to, you know, always challenge your beliefs, the way you work, the way you think, and not be afraid to bring things from theory to practice, and just try to, you know, switch the knowledge to experience.
The starting spot for methodology, does it start before your philosophy? Does it go into the personality type, or does it go a step further in that there?
Good one. I'm going to try to now maybe bring it to the level of my experience coming back to Czech Republic after 10 years, you know, I spent in Canada, where, you know, either when I was in the club, professional club, trying to establish the methodology, or when I was, you know, actually taking on the role where I am now currently as a head of coach education. For me, as I said, it was really important to understand the environment, you know, and the people within the environment, and to try to analyze where am I, what is working well, and why is it working well, and then where might be the gaps, you know, and maybe where are the spaces for improvement. And those things really drove the way I was trying to establish the methodology or even my coaching philosophy. Because there was a book which really, really got me thinking. I got this book as a gift from my fiance, and it was called Czech Football, the Happiness by Drops. So it was written in 2009, which was right after the golden era of Czech football. I think it was 2000, we were ranked number two in FIFA ranking. You know, we had the generation of Pavel Nedved, Tomáš Rosický, Peter Cech, Jan Koller, and many, many more. And those players were really known for being kind of like those type of playmakers. They play a big role within the biggest clubs in the biggest leagues. And it was shown on the international level. We had so much success. And in this book, one of the popular coaches from Czech Republic was asked, like, how does he explain the way we were actually developing these players back in the days? Because 2009, when the book was written, we were already kind of like on the downfall of Czech football. And he answered, and I'm trying to translate it in a way, I apologize for my English, by the way, to the listeners, but I'm trying my best. So correct me if I say something not really well. But he said that the only way he can explain how we were actually able to develop players was that there was something in our genetics, in our genes for sports which are like a team sports, that we're really creative, we're really original in the way we play the game, we're intelligent players. And we were not really, you know, at the top of the international level of football in terms of, you know, strength and conditioning, for example, parameters. We're still good, you know, but the way, you know, we define our football was the way how smart we were, the way we play. And if you look at the Czech football right now, we're actually, in my way, maybe some people might not, you know, agree with me or be even angry with me, but that's the way how I perceive it and how I always challenge discussions here, is that now we don't develop or produce the same level of players we did. We still have players, you know, a couple of players playing Premier League. In West Ham, we have Tomáš Souček, Vladimír Coufal. We have some players playing in Bundesliga, but they're not the same players as, you know, I mentioned before. And what I'm seeing is that we don't produce those playmakers. We don't produce those players who are really creative, adaptable, intelligent. But our league and our players are well known for their strength and conditioning skills. Like the top Czech division, there has been research done by one of the Czech clubs, and they found out that it was one of the most physically demanding league in the world. So, you know, it just tells you how it changed. And the reasons why it changed, we can always argue about, but for me, it's some of the obvious ones, how the society has changed. You know, for so many years in the generation of me and the previous generation and the players from the golden generation, they just spent so much time, you know, playing outside, playing on the streets, playing in a small community clubs with their friends till they were like 15, 16, and then they went on to some structure within the club. But they came to the clubs and academies, if you want to call them academies, when they already had developed those skills for decision making, you know, reading the game, being creative, being intuitive. And then when you went to the club, you were able to just give them the sense of rules, you know, maybe a little bit of, you know, drilling some specific things you wanted them to have, and etc. So that really informed the way how I'm trying to shape the methodology we're having here in Czech Republic, where I'm trying to convince the people, look at where we were, where we are, and what has changed. So how do we need to change the methodology in order to, you know, bring back the players from the golden generation, which were really known for their adaptability, you know, skills in a very creative way, the intelligence in terms of how they read the game and make the decisions and so on. So I don't know if that answered the question, but I think that can be a interesting way how to look at it.
Hello, coaches. We'll take a quick break here. If you are looking at improving your tactical analysis, or if you're an aspiring analyst, we are launching our first ever online course this week, a certificate in advanced tactical analysis and coaching methodology with Modern Soccer Coach, where we take a look at tactical analysis alongside the coaching aspect of it, alongside elite environments. It's an online course. You learn at your own pace. And there is a unique direct messaging option feature that you can get support and help from myself the whole way through, 11 modules. Plus, at the end, there's a match assignment as well that we will take a look at and go through. You will emerge from this course with a first-hand appreciation of pressing data, defensive data, attacking data, packing data, set piece analysis, match coding, game model design, scouting frameworks, and coach philosophy as well. Unique online program specifically designed for analysts, specifically designed for coaches. Learn at your own pace. We share expert processes from experienced professionals around decision making, merging coach philosophy, game models, understanding positional roles, scouting, match reviews, data integration, all geared towards improving and understanding effective analysis processes. Please check it out. It's in the podcast notes. It's available now. It's launched this week. Modern Soccer Coach online course, certificate in advanced tactical analysis and coaching methodology. Thanks for checking it out and hope you enjoy it.
There's a lot of cultures and countries that feel the same, that no, even Argentina, like, and they produce whatever every year. We would all we'd be happy with 1 year of output from Argentina for a whole Irish history. A lot of countries are challenged by the fact that creativity's kind of going, and with creativity, the way I would challenge that environments are becoming, yes, more coaching, and does more coaching equal better players, or more coaching equal more stoppages, more organization? Do we challenge that side of it enough? Because we're now trying to get, I understand we're trying to get better processes around it, but it's not just the soccer that's removing a lot of the methodology is perhaps a bit more organized and structured. But so is their life. They have to be in at X time, usually to do prehab and recovery and physical work. Then they're eating. Then they're doing physical work again. Then they might be doing a different type of support work. And I feel as if the overall environment around science has also created real structure that almost, I don't know if we're challenging it enough, where I think it would be a great conversation. If we are providing, not should we have structure, should we not have structure, freedom versus structure, not that, but more, if we are providing a lot of structure, can we then manipulate ways to free it up slightly?
It is a big one, Gary. It is a big one. And it's never ending conversation, right? Not just in life conversations, but even in the social media space. And, you know, there is a fine line for me in terms of how much structure is actually beneficial to the players and how much coaching is actually beneficial to the development of the players. It depends on the stage. It depends on, you know, the context, of course. But I think that even within the structured environment or organized environment, even within the club, I've mentioned, you know, one of the pedagogical frameworks which can actually inform the way you design your session, And, you know, there's a lot of evidence within the pedagogical framework saying that, you know, if you actually follow certain principles of session design, you know, you can actually achieve that the players have the autonomy to actually still, you know, solve the game in problems by themselves and learn and, you know, develop their creativity and so on. And that was the constraints-led approach. And, you know, if somebody's interested, I might now mention a few different ones. If somebody is really interested to just find resources and dig deep into it and get on the road, which I get on and I'm still on enough, believe I will be in the future, that, you know, I know that there is, for example, the constraints-led approach. Then you have something which is called the nonlinear pedagogy, which is really aligned with constraints approach. And that speaks about the design principles of the sessions. Then, you know, I've been learning about teaching games for understanding, game-based approach, differential learning. And if you as a coach are really trying to educate yourself and you go through all of these different variations of pedagogical frameworks, then you're starting to really understand how your session design might influence the development of the players in different areas. Then there is another type of approach which comes more from the and that is the biggest discussion we're having here in Czech Republic especially, and it comes with, you know, let's say the unopposed sessions, for example, and the decision making, what helps decision making, what actually limits decision making, and etc. It's those two different worlds. One is coming from the cognitive theory called information processing, which comes really much with, let's say, the theory of 10,000 hours, deliberate practice, and so on. And that is a little bit different, or actually, I should say a lot different, to the ecological dynamics theory, which actually supports the constraints-led approach and nonlinear pedagogy. And for me, it was important to try to understand both, try to apply both, and see, you know, or obtain the experience through just understanding and seeing what one does or one doesn't do, and then seeing how that actually influences the environment where I am in terms of what is my goal.
I mean, the process of understanding all those, you make is then learning and then practicing them. How would you advise, I suppose, a coach who is listening and going like, oh, yeah, this is... there's layers to this. There's levels to this. I wanna get stuck in, but I wanna make sure as well that I still remain consistent in some form. How do they balance that? Yes, learning and consistency.
Well, I haven't got to that point myself, to be honest, yet. So it's hard to answer that question. You know, I think, I guess for me, it's the beauty of the profession of being a coach, right? Once you stop challenging yourself, and I mean in a good way, I don't want to scare anybody. It's meant in the best way possible, that you're always curious. You're always trying to learn more. You're always trying to see the new trends which are coming from, you know, all different sorts of areas, either if it's from the theory, like research and science, or the practice. Then, you know, you can always know that you're trying to do your best, you know, to actually bring or create the environment the best way you think that you can to help the players. Because I think that every single coach is there, you know, to support the players the best way possible. That's what we do. And that's why I think that the clubs, you know, it's beneficial when you have that support staff within the club system. And now we're talking more about the elite, right? I'm not really a fan of the word elite, but let's say the high performance staff. Our clubs, where you have now departments of coach education, methodology, labs, and etc. And I think that the role is to help those coaches, if they're really busy with, you know, what they're doing every day with the players and with the teams, then there should be someone to make sure that if there's a motivated coach to learn more, that I'm here to support him by giving him resources, talk about it, having internal, you know, coach education opportunities, and always having that safe space to discuss, experiment, express opinion, and try to learn from each other, because more people knows more.
Yeah, you've also looked at other sports and other areas around that there in your. Yeah, I saw you've even through leadership, not necessarily mm-hmm. football methodology, but communication of it. I saw you've done some stuff for Mark Bennett over the last mm-hmm. 12 months. All right, so say when you go to say Mark in particular, a big fan of Mark, so I've got some different ideas about communication in the mm-hmm. environment itself. Mm-hmm. Then you, on one hand, you've got the methodology and the teaching, but on the other hand, it's the communication. And so, like, merging that together, I'm imagining, is going to be quite a complex process, because one of it's got the context of the game, and the other one may not be as explicit in the context of the game. Mm-hmm. So does that make sense?
Yeah. I think there are ways to always have an approach or a method which complements a different approach or a method. So if we're talking about pedagogy and then we're talking about psychology, then, you know, there are methods which complement each other. And of course, again, you know, every environment is different, is specific. So, you know, you can always kind of like adjust the methods, the approaches, the way it fits the needs of your players or the environment you're at. And for me, you know, if I'm talking about my coaching methodology, I really want to develop players which are, you know, independent from the coach. They're autonomous. And doesn't mean that the coach is not needed. I'm always there to guide the players. But I want them to have the sense of autonomy, competency, and connection, which is coming from the self-determination theory, which drives the players in terms of their motivation to continue striving towards, you know, achieving their goals. And if you look at the pedagogical frameworks I just mentioned, you can create an environment which is evidence-based and trying to help the players to actually develop these skills and then develop even decision-making, adaptability, good movement patterns, which are really effective within the real game. And then if we're talking about coaching and psychology and didactics, what Mark is talking about, and there are other, you know, interesting work done, and I'm trying to remember, it was called the positive youth development, for example. You know, they're talking about certain, you know, approaches which are not really scientifically hard. It's like everyday type of behavior, but the type of behavior which can actually enhance what you're trying to achieve with the players. So you want them to, you know, have accountability for their actions, for their behavior. So then you need to create the environment the way you actually interact with them. You trust each other to make sure you support that. And you have to act like a role model. You have to act like an example. You cannot, you know, expect something from the players which you're not following yourself. So if you really dig into, like deep into it, I think that there are ways how we can always find a complementary approaches which, you know, can align together and can actually have the same goals.
Brilliant. I think this is really different. I think that the way we are, you might disagree with this, so I'd love your opinion on this here. Like, are we presenting coaching today as almost a one-size-fits-all, where it's a philosophy, a periodization document, getting the sizes right? You know, do you think we're not asking enough questions in this area? Because I don't see these questions being asked, to be honest, Martin, in a lot of conversations about the pedagogy and looking down that and getting engaged in it and doing research of it and getting lost in the process of it. That message is promoted a lot today. I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, of course, within my role, I'm trying to challenge these perceptions as much as possible, to have really like a deep conversations and think critically about what are we trying to do, what are we trying to achieve. And I'm trying to change the narrative. And I'm not saying that it was here like that before me, not at all. But I'm trying to change the narrative, which comes from, let's say, the history of Czech Republic and the social cultural habits, to make sure that we're aware of that the one size fits all is not the best way how to actually develop the players. That, you know, we should not make them based on, you know, everybody fits that cookie cutter, as you guys have that great analogy in North America. But we're trying to change the way we're delivering the coaching courses in the way that there is no one right answer. There is no one right way how to achieve something. You know, there can be multiple ways how to achieve one thing. And we're trying to walk through as many as possible of them and really go deep into, if you go this way, this might be the benefits. This might actually be, you know, the disadvantages of this approach. And this might work in this environment. And this is why or why not. And then it's up to the coach to go to their environment and see what are the needs of the players they're working with and the environment they're at, and combine or pick and select, you know, out of these approaches and methods which fits that environment and those needs. And we want coaches to be original, like we want the players to be original and creative, right? Like, we don't want everybody to look the same, because we will never move up. We will never get better. We want, you know, coaches to actually create new information, new experiences, new approaches, new methods. That's what we're trying to achieve here. But of course, it's not an easy task to have.
No, but I think, I mean, if we're going to try and unlock a generation of players, in terms of we keep saying creativity, we keep saying decision making, then that has to start with a creative group of coaches who are willing to, you know, do what you say. But as well, like, what I think of when I hear you is, like, okay, we'll go back to the coach has to, you know, the coach has to take responsibility and lead in this area. But how do you, when you have that coach at the coach education event, how do you make the event, how do you make that experience really not just to sit and watch a presentation? How do you make that experience more powerful, or something that is going to be moving the coach to take action?
Yeah. Well, first, I might actually extend my answer to how you started actually your question, if you don't mind. And I think it's really important for us to change the narrative. What is in the center of the interest and importance within the process of the player development? Is it the coach and the coach's needs and the coach's ego? Or is it the player and the player's needs and, you know, player development? Or is it the needs, as we touch base on it, in the club philosophy? Or is it the need of the club, where we look at the player as, you know, a product we need to develop to be professional players, sell, and then actually bring the money back? So that is the point number one, or the step number one, to walk through a reflection. You know, what is important to you? What are you trying to achieve? What is your coaching philosophy? How you want to actually help players to develop? And then, you know, as you ask about how we're trying to achieve it through the coach education, it might sound maybe a little bit too broad, but we can go into the details. We're trying to bring the player, the coaches, the student coaches, to actually experience what they're trying to do with the players. So through the experience from actually the team dynamics within the group of coaches, how they interact, how they reflect on themselves in front of others, how the others reflect on them within that social group. We want that from the players as well. So, you know, the coaches sometimes need to go through that experience themselves as well, because when you're actually wanting something from the players you don't understand on a deeper level, sometimes it might not really work well. So we're trying to do that, and of course we're trying to make sure that it's balanced in terms of how much are the lecturers or the coach educators talking and presenting, and how much actually are the coaches / students presenting, working and discussing. Because you never know how much knowledge and experiences you already have in the room of coaches. And I can say an example, like, we can have a presentation, like I might be presenting on the topic of exercise physiology, and I know that, you know, I have certain knowledge, level of knowledge I should have for my position, but I know that I'm definitely not like a certified doctor or, you know, physician. And you might be, you know, delivering a content in the way that I'm going to tell you about what is true, what you should know, and what it means. But then you might not be aware that it might be like a specialized doctor with 3 degrees, you know, and 20 years of experience of practice, who knows much more about this topic than you do. And, you know, that might be a bad moment for you when you go into that, you know, kind of like discussion, and, you know, you go into talking about who is right, who is wrong. So imagine that you actually create an environment, a doubt-based learning environment, where you allow, you know, the knowledge and experience, which is already within the group of coaches, to be shared within the whole group of coaches and the lecturers and coach developers. And as you want with the players, to actually everybody express their strengths and be able to help each other with, you know, developing their weaknesses, then you can do the same with the coaches. So we do a lot of, you know, group works. We do a lot of discussions. We make sure that we set up the team dynamic the way we would set it up within the team of players, that everybody feels safe to express their opinion. There is no wrong answer. And we're trying to have that open mind.
Fantastic. I think there's something to that in a big, big way with coaching going forward. I think with coaches today, I think generally being intentional enough about taking it on, thinking about it and reflecting on it. And I think the learning environment changes, like you're saying, then all of a sudden your behaviors can change, and you can, that information can stick, or that information can at least be absorbed to some regard. Go back to the first bit there that you, which I thought this is fascinating, the way you talk about the coach learning about the environment that they're going to, like, okay, well, think about how the player is going to experience your coaching. How would you do that? What would be an example of that, facilitating that?
Well, for example, you know, like if we're talking, for example, about team dynamics, you know, you in a certain age groups, you want the players to kind of like take on a role within the team. Like, for example, what do you think, Gary, are your strengths you can actually use to help this team to achieve our, you know, our goals we all agreed upon and we set up together? You might say, like, I had players, I just, you know, use the analogy. They said, I feel like, you know, I'm really good playmaker. I have a good decision making, you know, and I like the ball. So I'm going to be the brain of the team, for example. And that is my role. Somebody else can be the lungs of the team because they have a great, you know, conditioning. So, if you're helping the players to go through this process to evaluate themselves and then be evaluated by the others, you can do the same within the team of the student coaches. You can say, okay, let's set up our goals here. Let's set up rules. You're going to set up the rules, and you guys should talk about the roles within this team of coaches to make sure that, you know, you're going to be accountable for that. So what can you do? And you don't need us for that as a coach, educators. And then, for example, when we go to practice, we're always trying to talk a little bit about the theory, and then let's go to practice to go through it. For example, what was really interesting is that in one of the recent blocks, we were talking about didactical styles, the Mushton spectrum. So guiding discovery, you know, and self-discovery and stuff like that. So when you're talking about it in theory, you know, it might be different than when you actually go on the pitch and you allow the coaches, for example, for a little bit to be the players. And then you can actually give them the experiences. You know, what is the difference between when I'm as a coach using one style and telling you what to do and how to do it, or when I'm using guided discovery and guiding you to think about those things and then, you know, actually feel like you're competent because you can give me some answers, which, you know, sometimes the coaches don't even think about. That's the beauty of guided discovery. Or we can do reciprocal style where you guys are actually talking to each other. For example, my wow moment like 15 years ago when I started with this was when I've stopped doing all the decisions for the players as a coach, and I tried to allow the players to actually solve the game problems themselves. And I remember we were working on building up from the back. I think it was under 14 or 15 team. And within the phase of play, You know, I stopped the game and I said, instead of telling the players what has been done well or what has been done wrong and we can improve, I said, all right, just create a groups based on positions within your team and talk about, you know, how are you solving this game problem and achieving our goal we have within this particular exercise. And what can you do better? What are you doing already good? What can you do better? You have a minute to chat about it. And I just stood up one group of the players, and it was center back, fullback, midfielder, and winger, all from one side of the pitch. And as I was listening, and this is really 13, 14 years ago maybe, I remember that the center back told the fullback, listen, buddy, I cannot pass you the ball because the way the opposition striker winger is actually pressing me, you're hidden behind him. And he's like, okay, what am I going to do? Well, you have to move somewhere where I can actually pass you the ball because then I'm under pressure and I have to go one-on-one. And if I make a mistake, it's a quick goal. And he was like, "What? Where can I go?" And the midfielder was, so what if I actually go away from that mid space so you can go inside, so invert yourself to this little gap I'm going to create? And on that, the winger said, well, and you're going to create the gap in behind that so I can actually, you know, be there and we can even have multiple options where you pass the ball. And Gary, I was standing there. I'm like, I was underestimating the players for such a long time that, you know, shame on me. And now I was a completely different coach from that moment and trying to make sure that this experience can be done through the coaches, even when they're learning about it. So when they're acting as a players, but they're having the mind, you know, the hat of the coaches. So then we can talk about it and discuss it and so on.
Brilliant. Let's say you're going through this process as a coach where you're learning and you're taking all this information and you're challenging, you know, traditional thought processes, and you're embracing it. How would you then, if you're a leader in a club, you know, you're going in, you're saying, all right, how do I get support around underneath doing this? Is it workshops? Is it building relationships? How would you recommend they do that?
Yeah.
To try and create that culture.
Yeah, I'm going to circle it around it a little bit if you don't mind. You know, at the end of the day, what I really found out is during the coach education programs, like the licenses and etc., there's just so much, you know, in terms of impacting the coaches you can do over those, you know, I don't know how many days or months. And what we're trying to do is to make sure that as they're experiencing the things, you know, as I was just describing, also we want them to always, you know, challenge themselves and bringing the new knowledge and ideas to their own environment. And then, you know, try it on, think about it, assess it, and then give feedback to yourselves and us. How did it go? You know, what did you like about it? What was working? What was not? Maybe sometimes or usually you need more time to get, you know, certain results, but it's good that you're thinking about it and challenging it. But when you actually stop going to these licenses, it's really hard for us to reach to you on that ongoing process of development, to be there as your mentor, so you don't just stop doing these things to really continue growing and being motivated to learn and experiment. And of course, sometimes it's even hard for the coaches to do that because there is a set structure within the methodology of the club, and the club is not allowing you to have your own flavor, you know, to actually add on your own originality, which I would always try to encourage the leaders to say, listen, if you want the buy-in from the coaches, you, as the same with the players, you should not limit them with their creativity and their originality. Let them have that aspect of, you know, competency and autonomy as well, but make sure that their guiding principles everybody respect for your methodology. So as you ask, what can you do within the club? I think it's always great to have people who are really overseeing the development of the coaches as we have, you know, the development of the players. Sometimes it's even important to just have, you know, for the coaches to have somebody to talk to and, you know, like complain about, you know, what is working, what is not working. Just be that good friend, you know, you can talk to. Even that is a big support. And then it's always good to have, as you said, workshops, educational opportunities within the clubs where you can discuss it. And, Here's one really interesting one. When I was recently visiting Sevilla FC in Spain, what I liked was about their internal coach education opportunities or events was that it wasn't really about that. Usually the one who is presenting something is the one who knows the most about the topic. But what they did was that it was all about everybody involved, and the coaches, they should come with the questions about, for example, in areas where they are struggling a little bit. And they want to actually bring it up to listen to others to collectively actually, you know, create a great discussion, which is beneficial to everyone, to talk about what can we do to achieve, you know, better outcome in this area? How can we help each other? What is your best experiences, and et cetera, and et cetera. So now it's all about, you know, kind of like reversing that environment of coach education. When you come back from the, for example, coaching license, and you used to always, you know, think about these things, looking for resources, challenging your thoughts, experimenting, and pushing you to push the players. And then everything stops. You know, sometimes the coaches just fall back to the routines they had before and becoming that kind of like traditional coaches, let's call them. So that is dangerous for sure.
Yeah. And you have a good point there. It's not always their fault if they're adhering to a curriculum that they don't maybe have a lot of space with. So those factors can come in. That's really interesting, the Sevilla one. When they're, is that almost like a preparation for the workshop where they have to almost bring that problem in order to add something to it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it just bring it in. I'm not sure, I cannot speak for them. So I'm not really sure if, you know, for example, some coaches decided this is the topic. I think that they're giving us an example that one team was struggling to actually constructively get out of throw-in situations. They're losing a lot of balls to the opposition. So in Sevilla Academy, they had this football lab, which, you know, was a group of coaches which are acting, let's say, like a head of the coaches from the academy in different, you know, age groups. And their role was really supporting all of the coaches on everyday basis, providing feedback, being those ones, you know, you come to information, challenge, or just discussion about certain topics. So they brought this this topic to this discussion within that coach education event, and all the other coaches were just sharing their experiences and knowledge. And, you know, the football lab people then, you know, did a little bit of like a feedback loop in terms of their recording practices, games, and, you know, when they're actually setting up the, let's say, the weekly planning of the sessions, and they incorporated this game problem within the session design, then they're trying to look at, you know, in the games in the future, if they actually got better in this or not, and if they're effective in what they're trying to achieve or not. And this type of feedback is missing in a lot of places, just because you don't have it within the system. The people who have the time to evaluate and assess, you know, sessions and games, and really look at what you're trying to do and the way you're trying to do it, and giving you, you know, always that opportunity for the feedback.
Brilliant. Yeah, I love that. It is tough to, as a coach, it's tough. You mentioned there about when you leave the course and you get pushed and challenged, and you might not like it at the time as much, but it does make you better. And there's something that's really powerful about that experience. And when that experience then is gone, then it can be, you can feel a little bit isolated when you're not getting it. What have you experienced that's different or unique to the Czech culture around coaching that's different from North America? Maybe one of the biggest one or two experiences.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to be totally transparent and honest here. I think that, you know, living in Canada and living in Czech Republic, those are two completely different cultures. And now I can actually come back to my first experience with you when I met you, because now it fits perfectly. Look at that. You built a great bridge for me to get there. But, you know, it actually comes within the answer to your question, When I met you, it was 2014 at St. FX University in Antigonish, Canada, at the coaching event, which was organized by the one and only Graham Kennedy, one of my biggest mentors and most favorite people on the earth. And I remember that you're running a presentation on certain topic, and it was at the time when you actually published your first book, if I'm correct, 2014.
Yeah, you're right.
And I remember at the time, I was there as assistant coach of the first men team, and I was still traveling back to Czech Republic every half a year to finish my master's degree. And I was just working on a paper for my master's degree. And I came to you and I asked you a question because the topic was something about coaching. And you wrote this book, and I just asked you, like, do you have any resource which, you know, I might be able to use? And what you did was like, Martin, meet me tomorrow 3 p.m. On a coffee here in the coffee shop and bring your external hard drive with you. So I did. And you gave me all of your resources you're using to write the book and even more. And you just said, listen, here is everything I have. Hopefully it's going to be helpful. And that speaks to the biggest differences, you know, within the culture of Czech and Canada. We're getting much better. I don't want to make Czech Republic look really bad for the audience listening, but, you know, if you look at the history of Czech Republic, you know, we went through wars, you know, people were afraid to speak loudly, to speak the truth they had. You know, people really didn't trust each other. So that is always, there is still influencing a little bit, you know, how we go about coaching and sharing, especially like being open-minded and being able to share and having like a common goal. Like in Canada, I felt like they had a common goal, which was to positively influence soccer environment, everybody involved within it. And the way you do it, you know, in different club, in different province will be different, but there are certain, you know, principles which we should have in common because we believe that will help us in the long-term goal. And we should be sharing because if I have my methodology and I share it with you, you're in different environment, even though it's just a club few kilometers away from me, you have different people, you know, different resources. So my methodology will not work for you if you just copy and paste it. It will never work. If I try to copy and paste what we did in Canada here in Czech Republic, I'll be crucified very quickly because it will be a suicide. So that was the biggest difference that, you know, in Canada, the way people throughout coach education or just coaching environment or just the way of life, how they trust each other and share the resources openly and trying to support and wish you a luck and every success on your way. It was unbelievable. And I'm trying to really bring these things to this environment and just try to not change, but shape the way how we go around these things here in Czech. You know, that's how we you know, trying to organize our sessions, coaching seminars. You said that you saw some of the social media posts I just did. When our goal is to bring the people together and trying to create that environment where people are actually not taking coach education opportunities as the necessary evil, but something which is positively motivational, and they want to be part of that. So they're, you know, feeling like they're being part of actually that seminar, being active, interact, socialize, and etc. So those are the massive differences, you know, I'm seeing. And as I said, I think that we're getting better and better in the Czech Republic, but there's still a long way ahead of us. And if we want to help the whole culture here of football or even sport to be positively impacted, we need to actually work together in this sense and, you know, create that safe environment of cooperation.
Brilliant. Yeah, that event almost 10 years ago, actually still look back at it. Very, very powerful for me. There's a couple of people. I remember Danny Worthington was at that event. Brilliant. And Danny helped me a lot over the years on the analysis side. And then I was telling someone the story, I only told someone on the podcast a few weeks ago about Keith Mincher. Remember him?
Oh, who was absolutely
unbelievable. Like, that event was unbelievable. I give you my hard drive because after listening to them, I'm like, I'm Eustace. You can have whatever you need.
Well, it's not going to change my opinion that it was a nice gesture.
They were brilliant. Key stuff was so good, wasn't it, on the psychology? And he was such a powerful speaker.
And if I might jump to this, it might circle back to what you said about the coaches coming back to their own environment, and maybe they're not getting the support, from within the club to continue, their development and, looking for resources and et cetera. What really helped me in those cases was to try to, find so-called mentors, somebody who was, really, helping me to continue my development, somebody who had more experiences, more knowledge, was willing to share, was there to, if I would, let's say I need feedback, I always need feedback as a coach. So I would invite once upon a time somebody, I called my mentor or somebody just from the outside to come in and observe my session and give me a feedback and really, really thorough feedback. So then, I can take it constructively. So that is one thing. And the second thing is what I just mentioned is, for example, you and me, you were one of those people who had more experience and knowledge than myself. But since I've met you and others on my journey, I always try to not be, shy to come to you, introduce myself and try to stay in touch with you to actually, always ask questions like, Gary, how would you approach this problem? Like, what do you think about that? And if people like that always are that source of information and feedback, that can help coaches to get where they want to go. Because I'm 100% fortunate enough to have these mentors and be connected to people who are top in their area of focus and specialization till today, and it helps me so much. And I'm trying to be the same for the new coaches and the upcoming coaches as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's actually a nice way to kind of bring conversation around. And that I felt we started off at thought you kicked this off at level 16 almost, where coach could go, this, wow, where do I start? But then you've kind of brought it back to, you can start by building a community, you can start by kind of impacting your own support group and giving back and doing all these things. I guess that would be my last question for you, would be, I always ask advice in the last few questions about, okay, young people that are inspired by not just your message, also in your path and your journey. What would you say to a 24, 25-year-old coach that's just about to embark on this here in a different landscape than when we were all doing it? More competitive business, and there's a lot of noise around it. What are some things that you would say to that coach that's, maybe it's someone on the courses, or maybe it's someone that's just reaching out to you and saying, listen, I want to work at the highest level. How do I do it?
Wow. Now I'm sensing that weight on my shoulders to, be careful what I'm going to say. Especially from my position. But, I would say just never give up. Never give up. Try to always feed your hunger for curiosity, for information. Don't be afraid to experiment. Don't be afraid to have discussions. Always try to seek feedback and go through reflection. There is unbelievable, I think it is a theory, and it's called Dunning-Kruger effect. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
I think that will summarize what I'm trying to say here. Dunning-Kruger effect, everybody who is listening, just look it up on YouTube. There are fantastic videos or on Google. And it speaks about when people don't know what they don't know. So if you think that you know everything there is to know, then you might be actually in trouble, because you might not be aware of the other things there are still to know. So if, let's say, there is 100% of a knowledge and you think that the 100% is within your 10% you're perceiving as the 100%, and you think that from those 10% you know everything, then you're not aware of the 90% of what is still there to know. So usually the people who are more confident about what they do and the way they do it and the way they act and behave. And when the discussion, we all know those people, especially social media, you know, speaking about politics and war and stuff like that. So those are those usually, I don't want to, you know, offend anyone, but those are those who kind of like are, you know, under the Dunning-Kruger effect, because they're not aware of so much more knowledge there is to have. The context is the key. So be careful, you know, to stop going through the reflection and development, to not get stuck and not become, let's say, you know, a coaching dinosaur. When you're trying to do the same things over and over again and expecting different outcomes, that is the definition of madness from Einstein, right? So, yeah, always try to keep educating yourself, looking for interesting people. Just surround yourself by people who are really pushing you and challenging you to be better every day in everything you do as a person and as a coach.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Wow, what an interview. This went way different than I thought it was going to go. And I'm so,
should I apologize?
The other way around. Like, actually, wow, this has made me think an awful lot. So, amazing. I'm so glad. I'm so happy you came on. Thank you so much.
No, it is an honor and pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really, really appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast. For more coaching topics, sessions, and resources, head on over to Coach Kernin on Facebook or visit the website at www.modernsoccercoach.com.